Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 22, 2015. The SPLM in opposition fires two of its top commanders.
These are our own internal administrative issues. There should be no cause for alarm. They are a very normal thing, and they have nothing to do with the peace process. The peace process is still ongoing, and we are still committed to it.
And Human Rights Watch is also accusing the South Sudan Army of raping and killing civilians in Unity State.
Government soldiers, together with allied forces from the Bunua, burnt scores of villages, hundreds of huts, and also attacked and killed many civilians and raped many women.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Rebel leader Riek Machar removed Major General Peter Gadet and Major General Gatkot from their duties. South Sudan in Focus obtained a copy of directives by Machar, relieving the two top commanders from the rebels' military wing. Machar's letter did not explain the reason for the changes. Today, Mabior Garang, the spokesperson of the SPLA in opposition, tells VOA fellow Tito Justin that Machar did not fire his top commanders, but rather plans to reassign them to other duties. He says it was time for other people to take over.
Firing is a very strong word. We are not calling it firing. It's a reshuffle. This kind of thing happens in any organization. We have had a reshuffle. It is Major General James Gadet, who was in charge of operations, and Major General Gados Tatquad, who was in charge of logistics, and Major General James Kwong, who was the Division 1 commander, have been relieved. James Kwong has been promoted to Deputy Chief of General Staff for Operations, and Major General Gados and Major General Peter Gadet are pending their new assignments, are still pending.
Why is your leadership doing so at a time when you and the government are preparing to sign a final peace deal next month?
These are our own internal administrative issues. There should be no cause for alarm. They are a very normal thing, and they have nothing to do with the peace process. The peace process is still ongoing, and we are still committed to it.
Where are Major General Peter Gadet and Major General Gatot Gatkot right now as I speak to you?
They are in Ethiopia. They were in Gambela on the way to Addis Ababa.
We understand that they have been arrested.
No, on our side, there is no such thing. They have not been arrested. It is just a normal reshuffle which has happened, but this is false.
What is the impact of this reshuffle to your commanders at a time when you need them?
Well, there are very many commanders, and the movement is a people's movement. So other sons and daughters of South Sudan will also be performing. It's not just for one person. So, like I said, Major General Gadet and Major General Gadot will be reassigned to a different assignment. We have heard the rumors from some ambassadors of the Salva Kiir administration who are alleging that there has been a split in the movement. But maybe that is the wishful thinking of these people. Maybe this is what they want to happen. And this is the reality inside their head. But this is subjective.
What is the mood of the other commanders down on the ground there?
Well, of course, any reshuffle will always cause voices of displeasure from certain areas, but generally speaking, the situation is normal. But just like everybody has their own interests, and maybe if you see that your person who was serving your interests has been removed, you might complain. But like I said, those are normal things, and they are normal parts of reshuffles. Whenever there's any reshuffle anywhere, there's always voices of complaint. But as an opposition, this is what we are struggling for people to be able to have that right to express their dissatisfaction with their leaders. So it's very normal, and we are continuing with the struggle and focusing on IGAD Plus. We don't want people to bring in rumor mongering that is intended to derail the peace process.
That was Mabior Garang, the spokesperson of the SPLA in opposition, speaking to VOA fellow Tito Justin from Nairobi. An analyst with the University of Juba says the change within the military ranks of the SPLM in opposition is a bad sign for the rebels. Luka Byong says Machar's decision to fire Peter Gadet could create problems for the rebels. He says Some military commanders of the SPLA in opposition are shifting alliances to secure government jobs in the event a comprehensive peace agreement is signed in August.
I think people should not be surprised about what is happening, because, and it happened before even to the SPLM, because the SPLM had such a difficult time for the leader and division. And especially when you are about to have to conclude any peace agreement, there's a likelihood there a high tension and conflict of interest. So I think people should not be surprised by such a split that happened in the SPLM in opposition, because these are dynamics usually are bound to be there.
Let's look at the structures within the SPLM in opposition. You have the political wing, that is the SPLM in opposition, and you have the military wing, that is the SPLA in opposition. Obviously, Peter Gadet has a lot of following in the SPLA in opposition. How is this going to impact on the political dynamics of the movement as they prepare themselves to go for the next round of negotiations next month in August?
And the wing, I think, are very at a very early stage of the formation. And they come at the time immediately you have a lot of big issues about the negotiations for peace. And at the same time, you have these sanctions being imposed. So this one, all these things could create a lot of mistrust. Unlike SPLM, SPLM took them some time, SPLM during the struggle, took them some time for these institutions to evolve and to be strengthened. But what is happening is that you have a movement that is established within a very short period of time, fighting a war, having a political agenda, but at the same time embarking immediately on this issue of peace talks. And peace talks is raising a lot of expectations, and everybody is very calculated, and coupled with the fact that the institution within the SPLM in the opposition is really at a very early stage of the formation. And you are bound to have this clash of institutions, clash of interests, these things are not structured efficiently, so that you can be able to resolve some of the tension or conflict. And I think we should also remember that these things are happening in the middle of a lot of, I could say, regional and national, narrow political, economic, and security interests. You could see also there's an influence by the neighboring countries, because some of them are becoming so involved in the conflict in South Sudan. So if you just rule out also, despite the fact that it will be dynamic within the SPLM in opposition, this is an institutional problem. But you may not rule out also that you may have a foreign hand in such division.
And let's look at Juba. I mean, I've seen a lot of messages on the social media, especially the Facebook page for the South Sudan Embassy in Washington. They are saying that more is going to happen. They're saying a lot of other commanders who are being targeted in this shakeup will rebel against Dr. Riek Machar. Is there any truth in what is being predicted?
The division within the SPLM opposition may be good news to some. For me, I want to reflect a bit on the history of SPLM. I think any division, even within the warring parties, may not contribute to the peace process. Because what is going to happen, we are going to have a proliferation and division within these, even the opposition party. And what is going to happen, we are going to have to face many fronts in terms of engaging even in the peace talk. So having many actors in the peace talk by itself will be confused the situation, and it will complicate the situation. Personally, I feel it's within the interest of the South that even the SPLM opposition should be held to unite itself around issues of peace.
That's Luca Byung, the director of Center for Peace and Development Studies at the University of Juba. He was speaking to me earlier today from the capital, Juba. President Kiir's cabinet today passed a 20-year plan that is aimed at boosting agricultural output and reducing South Sudan's reliance on food imports. Waki Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Juba.
The plan was presented by the Minister of Agriculture, Beda Machar. It has short, medium, and long-term goals for farming that extend over a 20-year period. Information Minister Michael Makuei told the reporters after the extraordinary cabinet meeting at which the plan was passed that the first 5 years of the plan are projected to cost 3.9 million South Sudanese pounds or the equivalent of $1.3 million.
The objective of this plan is to contribute to the economy through increased production and productivity and production in the agricultural subsectors.
Makuei says the cabinet has
directed that it should be presented to the National Legislative Assembly for consideration. The cabinet advised that this should be the ministries should be increased to include the Ministry of Trade, to include two other ministries.
South Sudan currently relies on imports from neighboring countries, particularly Uganda, Kenya, and Sudan, to meet the food needs of its people. It is hoped that the plan that was passed today will give the farming sector in South Sudan a big enough boost so that the country produces enough food to feed its people and no longer has to rely on food bought from other countries to do so. Zakaria Ding Akol is a researcher and an analyst with the South Sudan think tank, the Soot Institute. He says the new agricultural plan builds on one of South Sudan's richest natural resources.
South Sudan as a country is blessed with arable land, that is the land that can be used to farm, produce food that could be used both to feed population and also for commercial purposes. So I think it is a right move.
But Akol says it is still too early to say if the 20-year plan will bear fruit.
As you know, it's not good just to have a piece of paper, no matter how rich it may be in terms of ideas. But if it cannot be implemented for whatever reason, then that cannot really make a demonstrable change.
The cabinet approved the plan amid warnings by international aid agencies that unless the government moves quickly and decisively to boost the farming output and reduce reliance on imported food, South Sudan could be sliding toward famine. The United Nations has said nearly 5 million South Sudanese risk going hungry this year, largely because of the 19-month-old conflict that has displaced millions and severely disrupted farming. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a human rights group accuses government forces of shocking acts of violence. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who is your favorite relative and why?
Yeah, my favorite relative, the youngest kid in my family, she's the most close to me because she's so fun and she's intelligent. I like the way she converses, the conversation, you know. That's why I like her the most.
My favorite relative, I think I should say my mom. Yeah, because I'm so open to her. We talk. Apart from my mom. Oh my God, that's so hard. My grandmother. She has been there for me since my mom. Like, my mom is around, but my mom is not always around, so my grandma, she's always there for me.
My favorite relatives, my immediate sisters, they always give me courage, show me the reality in what I'm doing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. International advocacy group Human Rights Watch is accusing the South Sudanese army and allied militias of raping women, killing civilians as they fled into the bush during burning villages and looting property during a surge in fighting in Unity State earlier this year. In a report released yesterday, Human Rights Watch describes what it calls shocking violence against civilians in the oil-rich state between April and June. Human Rights Watch is calling for an investigation into the violence against civilians, which it says could amount to war crimes. Philip Thornalew reports for VOA from Juba.
The Human Rights Watch report echoes accusations made last month by the UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS. Both Human Rights Watch and UNMISS say in their reports that the SPLA and associated armed groups waged a campaign of violence against civilians in Unity State. The reports say women, men, children, and the elderly who were caught up in fighting for control of the Oyo Ridge State were raped, beaten, and even run over by the SPLA tanks. Sky Wheeler, a researcher for the Africa Division of Human Rights Watch, says the advocacy group's researchers were told harrowing stories by more than 170 witnesses and survivors of the alleged attacks who were interviewed for the report.
We found that government forces, government soldiers, together with allied forces from the Bulmua, burnt scores of villages, hundreds of huts, and also attacked and it killed many civilians and raped many women. Other women were also beaten or abducted, and in some cases, women and children were forced to take goods, things that had been looted, pillaged, stolen by the fighters back to Bulmua areas.
Human Rights Watch says in the report that terrified civilians were shot as they fled into forests and swamps. The report documents 63 cases of rape, including gang rapes. Human Rights Watch accuses government soldiers and the militia allies of completely destroying the town of Tiyar in southern Unity State and touching parts of the other towns and villages. The report says some civilians were crushed to death by SPLA tanks as they ran for their lives.
We found a very widespread and systematic pattern of abuse by the government, and these are compromised war crimes. And maybe even crimes against humanity.
The report calls for the Netherlands-based International Criminal Court to investigate the alleged atrocities or for a hybrid court made up of South Sudanese and international lawyers and judges to be set up to prove and prosecute the alleged crimes. Wheeler says the South Sudanese authorities must also take steps to avoid a repetition of the brutality documented in the report.
The government should really take action very quickly now to try and find out which commanders were most responsible for forces that committed these abuses and to find out why this government offensive was so incredibly destructive and ruined so many lives.
SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre says the army is already investigating the claims made in last month's UNMISS report and will prove whether army personnel were involved in the alleged atrocities documented in the Human Rights Watch report.
If it is proof that the SPLA soldiers or officers have committed such violation, definitely this is against our laws, our South Sudan Army, and it is against the rules of engagement that prohibited any killing of innocent civilians and violation of their rights and properties.
The Human Rights Watch report was released just days before government and the rebel negotiators are due to travel to the Ethiopian capital to pick up copies of a compromise deal aimed at ending 19 months of fighting in South Sudan. The deal has been put together by East African bloc IGAD and is being debated today by the expanded South Sudan mediation team known as IGAD Plus. Peace talks for South Sudan are set to resume in Addis Ababa early next month, after a five-month break during which fighting flared again, particularly in Unity and Upper Nile States. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
The new head of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Stephen O'Brien, began a four-day visit to South Sudan today. The first stop on O'Brien's itinerary was a visit to a UN camp for the internally displaced persons in Juba. Charlton Doki was there.
At the UN camp, we visited a cholera center, a center that is treating cholera patients. O'Brien also met with a women's group, and the women were able to tell him some of the challenges that they encounter as they live in the camp. And, of course, many of these women have been here for close to 2 years now since the conflict began.
What were some of the concerns that the women raised with Mr. O'Brien?
The meeting with the women's group was not open to the media. It was not open to the reporters. But I understand that the women expressed concerns about some of the hardships. You know, they are crowded. Now there is cholera. They have
Some of them say they are tired of living in the camp and would like to go to their villages. So after the visit, O'Brien had a brief moment with reporters, and I asked him what concerns he would be expressing when he meets government officials tomorrow, and this is what he had to say.
It's very important that we carry a message there. The one thing that matters above all else is that the sanctity of life should be paramount, and that we should be doing everything we can to protect civilians, innocent civilians, from the terrible risk and the fear of death from all the violence that is taking place. Of course, the best thing that can happen for everybody in South Sudan is for there to be no more fighting.
I also asked Mr. O'Brien whether when he meets government officials, he will be raising the issue of human rights abuses as alleged in a report that was released by Human Rights Watch yesterday. And this is what he had to say.
Of course, I, like everybody else, have heard about various abuses, human rights and otherwise, by forces throughout the country from all quarters. And I think it's absolutely important that we make sure that where there are such abuses, that we make sure that there's transparency and that there is accountability. It is vital for the safety and security of the people of South Sudan.
So Mr. O'Brien will be here for 4 days. In the next few days, Mr. O'Brien also expects to visit another UNMISS camp that is hosting internally displaced persons.
That was Charlton Doki speaking from Juba on that difficult line with the South Sudan in Focus editor Karen Zaivoko about visit to South Sudan by the new UN humanitarian chief, Stephen O'Brien. The ruling SPLM party secretariat in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state has dismissed and replaced all 51 of its youth league members. SPLM leaders in Juba say the dispute should be resolved following party's rule. Abraham Agot has more for VOA from Awil.
The SPLM's youth leadership members, who range in age from 25 to 35, were elected in 2008 during the party's second convention. Last week, all 51 were removed by the party's secretariat. Those who lost their positions to newly promoted youth were not allowed to attend the secretariat's closed-door meeting last Tuesday and Wednesday. Two of the dismissed members who attempted to enter the meeting hall were arrested and detained for an entire day. Youth League positions in South Sudan are seen as gateway to holding leadership positions within the ruling party later on. Bona Bagapeng is an SPLM Youth League Secretary General in Awil South County. He was detained along with Valentino Aguirre-Guach during last week's reshuffling. The two youth accused senior politicians of being guilty of their positions and said their arrests were illegal. Police Commissioner Akoding Akot says the two were detained, not arrested, but that their detention was necessary to maintain security.
SPLM has meetings and political preparations, which is not our work. Our work is to provide them with the security. If someone comes and says he or she wants to enter the conference room without any identification, we don't allow that. There were two youth who came and said they wanted to enter the conference room without identifying themselves. After I investigated the matter, I released them immediately. This is not arrest.
The dismissed youth leaders said they were not given any reason for the change, nor were they notified or involved in the process. Mayuol Ding Mayuol, the SPLM Youth League's Secretary General, was also removed from his position. He told iRadio that the entire community of northern Bahr al-Ghazal, including its youth, are not in favor of what he termed the illegal reorganization.
We have rejected it because we are not refusing change, but we think if anyone wants to remove you from the office, he should follow the legal ground, the constitutional ground. But what happened was not based on any legality. Our office was not aware, and I wrote to the deputy SPLM chairperson of the state, and he said he will meet me, but he failed.
Mayuol says the state's SPLM secretariat identified the people brought in to replace the youth league members. He says legal procedures were not followed, and he wants the national SPLM leadership to intervene. Ashwil Malith Bangol, SPLM Secretary for Popular and Syndicated Organization in Juba, says the party is governed by internal rules and regulations, and that both parties in a will should simply follow parties' procedures to resolve the matter, but did not specify who was right and who was wrong.
The dismissal, the reparation, any other punishment, it is well written in the SPLM basic document, and there's a clear procedure how to do it.
Bangold encouraged the dismissed SPLM youth leaders in a will to exhaust all avenues, including lodging their complaints in Juba. For VOA News, I am Abraham Goth reporting in a will.
Meanwhile, in the United States, a South Sudanese organization calling itself South Sudanese Youth Congress is inviting young South Sudanese from all over America to participate in a conference set to get underway tomorrow. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ian Bior has more from Washington.
Toothbrush? Check. Sleeping bag? Check. Cell phone? Check. Aspirations to be a leader in South Sudan? Check. This could be the checklist of former Lake State resident Dawdut Jock, who now lives in the Midwestern U.S. state of Iowa. He's preparing to co-host a four-day South Sudan Youth Conference beginning this Thursday in Kansas City, Missouri. Jock studied philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania and is finishing up his master's thesis in global leadership from the University of London. Jock and the South Sudanese Youth Congress are busy working on all the details, but he says the main objective will be to make American South Sudanese children realize they must step up right now.
I personally believe that the whole idea that youth are the future is a myth. I don't believe in it. It's a lie. The youth are not the future. They're the now.
About 20 Youth Congress organizers across the U.S. are getting vendors in place and making sure all 300 or so participants have transportation to Kansas City. The Youth Congress was established by a group of 14 South Sudanese about a year ago to help the youth maximize their potential by taking college-level courses at accredited U.S. universities, applying for scholarships, internships, and financial aid. The conference is sponsored by the Dawdut Jock Foundation, which was established by Dawdut Jock and named after his father, Dawdut Jock, who died fighting for the SPLA in Sudan's Second Civil War. Jock says the conference will focus on uniting young South Sudanese men and women, as well as offering advice on resume building, how to dress for job interviews, and making professional connections.
Because if they succeed, each individual succeeds, we all succeed. Their success is our success. Their happiness is our happiness. And if you empower more young people, they will take care of their families, communities, and then eventually country.
Jock says it is not easy for South Sudanese to integrate into society, such as learning how America's education system works, because their parents did not go to school here in the U.S. But he says education is key for any individual who aspires to become a leader. He emphasizes that the Youth Congress is not a political organization. Rather, it aims to foster constructive dialogue so that members feel confident about expressing their opinions.
We need to give young people a platform from which to express themselves. Two, we need to give young people the opportunity to make mistakes and lead. And I think if it's politicized, you run into problems.
On Saturday, participants will take part in a town hall-style meeting where speakers will include the former Miss World contestant Wendy Aguth, who represented South Sudan, and Malat Way, an inspirational speaker and wheelchair-bound basketball player with the team Houston Tier Hot Wheels. The two will engage the audience in a discussion on social networking and the importance of education. Amol Milo, a 25-year-old South Sudanese-American, is driving himself and a few friends to Kansas City from Texas. Milo says he's excited to attend the conference because it will encourage young South Sudanese to not only set goals, but provide support and advice on how to reach those goals.
And in the process of pursuing their dreams and bettering themselves, to also think about, you know, the people back home, think about the opportunities that have been granted to them here in America and seeing how they can utilize their skills and gifts.
Jock says the conference will also focus on connecting with parents, many of whom experience difficulty adjusting to American culture. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
That's our show for this Wednesday. I'm John Tanza, also here in Washington. Thank you for listening and join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.